Welcome to Life and Love in the Q, a podcast for the LGBTQIA2S+ community, those who support them, and those who just want to learn more.
Together we share the stories and the science of the space and grace to live life in full color.
I'm Jillian Abbey, proud lesbian and mother, Hay House author, queer blogger, and TikTok something or other.
And I'm Trisha Peterson. I'm an LGBTQ ally, proud mom of six, professor and researcher of identity and the social narratives that impact the way we live and love.
So open your mind, open your heart, and welcome to Life and Love in the Q.
Okay, Jill, we are in for an awesome conversation, but first, how are you?
I'm feeling, you know, like when you go through Christmas and it's all exciting and nice and stuff, and at the same time, you're kind of like ready for that break from the holiday season. Like, we're done with Pride Month now. It was great. It was big. I'm tired. I'm ready to pack up the decorations and, you know, go buy some cheap discount rainbow gear now and store it away till next year.
Well, this is going to be a great conversation following up after Pride, because I think during Pride Month, you have a lot of people, definitely the allies are all out, right? And definitely the LGBTQ community is all out. And I would even say that your adversaries are out in full force, because these people, they're the ones posting the memes. Why does Pride Month get a full month and veterans only get a day? Like,
not going to say I haven't heard that more than a few times. Yes.
So all of the people are out in their full living color during Pride Month.
Yeah.
But now I can't remember where I was going with that. But then we do really have people who start to step away, and it all gets a little bit more silent after that. And the thing that we're going to talk about today is safe allies. So what's the difference between a safe ally and an unsafe ally? And this is also a question that it was actually a conversation that got started on one of my Facebook posts during Pride Month. And I really appreciated the person who brought it up, because her specific point was, but what do you think about the people who claim to be allies, but they still are deeply enmeshed with communities and belief systems that are loud and proud adversaries or adversarial? Yeah. And I thought that was such a great question, because a lot of times I think that we kind of think in terms of buckets, just like we do with everything else. I am an ally, end of story. I belong in the ally bucket. I belong in the adversary bucket. I belong in the advocate bucket. But this concept of being a safe or an unsafe ally really got me thinking, even in terms of my own self, am I a safe ally, and what makes me that? So what are your thoughts so far?
I'm really glad that we're having this conversation, because I think for me, unsafe allyship is one of the most unsettling things. So we've talked recently in episodes about uncertainty and being in those unknown spaces. And for me, that's one of the biggest challenge with those allies that you can't entirely read if they're really on board or not. I find that the situation is popping up more in my life, because obviously I put myself out there as a person where I will always hold space for another person. I always invite curiosity and questions. I want to be able to have these hard discussions. Yeah. And at the same time, I'm still a person. I'm still a human. And so when the conversation starts to go into areas where either who I am or the person I love or my relationship are being looked at as less than or subhuman,
yeah,
it's really hard not to internalize that. It takes me a lot of time after some conversations to shake it. And I had one of these situations recently with somebody who said, you know, are you okay if I ask questions? Absolutely. And they said, well, what do you think about this? Like, you can be attracted to a person and you don't have to act on that. For example, if I'm at a bar and I see a guy across the bar and I find him really attractive and I walk over and I see he's wearing a wedding ring, it's like it hits a kill switch for me. And I say, okay, that's not our, even though I feel it in attraction, I'm not going to pursue it. And I said, okay. And they said, or say you're on a date and the person's great. They check the box in all the areas. And as you're walking home on your date, they kick a dog and cause injury. And that's like another kill switch for you. Like, you're willing to harm animals. That's a no. Even if you felt an attraction for the person, you realize that this is not a good relationship to be in, and you can end the relationship. And while they didn't come out and explicitly say it, the implication behind the line of thinking was that I can have attraction for women, but I also should be able to have a kill switch that says, even though I feel this attraction, I'm not going to act on it. And so they said, so what are your thoughts on that? And for me, it was crystal clear, because I thought, well, how do you not see that in the first two situations you mentioned, there's harm? Like, the first one is that you're breaking up a marriage. The second one is that you're injuring an animal and you have very questionable ethics. And I said, I'm trying to understand where the harm is.
Yeah.
In my love for Jen, in our consensual adult relationship. We didn't go into the answer. And again, I know, you know, we can all hypothesize where they think the harm is in that, you know, where certain members of our society say the harm is in that. But that was a moment where somebody who I thought, I guess, was on my side, somebody who does consider themselves an ally, the fact that, as you said, aligning with that line of thinking of like, I'm cool with you, but also, should you really be doing this?
Yeah.
Was very destabilizing for me.
Yeah. I think, like, my brain is actually thinking of so many different ways that we become unsafe allies, even outside of the LGBTQ world. Like, I was actually just working on a chapter for my book, and I was reflecting on my experience with my sister, like 20, 25 years ago. And it was way before the LGBTQ conversation was big.
Mm-hmm.
And they had been married in our church in the temple, and he was gay. Her ex-husband was gay. And she had a lot of emotions. And this is why I've been thinking about it. In hindsight, I said so many of the wrong things to my sister at the time. I've been just really thinking on that. But one of the things I was thinking about is so many people kept telling her how important it was for her to forgive. And to the point where people would give her books on forgiveness and quotes about, you know, people would send her messages about forgiveness and text messages about forgiveness. And like, in hindsight, knowing everything, you know, now that I know, what she really just needed was people to listen to her story. But all of these people had a judgment about how long her bitterness or her sorrow or whatever the emotion, they all had an opinion on how long that experience should last. And so then they were trying to give her advice on fixing her, her experience. And I think we do that a lot, right? Like, we put our lens onto other people's lived experience and expect our lens to be right for everybody. So this concept of you doing harm is only real to somebody who believes that your relationship is a disgrace to God or
right,
like, but that's their lens, not yours.
Right. I think our love is divine. I've actually never felt closer to God than being so aligned with who I am as a person. It's like, no, I've found my person. Why are you so concerned with the body parts involved? This is like, we are connected on a cellular level. This is soul to soul connection. Forget the parts.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be nice if, like, well, for one thing, I just have to say, I really, really struggle. I've been chatting with a person that I went to high school with, and we keep talking about that we might be the two last prudes in the world. We may possibly be the last two living prudes. Which is possibly true, like, knowing what I know about me, and I've talked to you a little bit about all the things, but it blows my mind that we are so concerned with the parts involved. with something so intimate as sex and so life-giving as a relationship. I mean, relationships can drain the energy out of our souls, mm-hmm. or they can light our souls on fire. Mm-hmm. Why would we ask an entire population to have their souls sucked dry? I don't think people get that.
Right. And that's kind of the thing in the situation where I was in, where it's like, okay, so fine. So say I am of the same belief system that a same-sex relationship is not okay. So I hit the kill switch.
Yeah.
What are my other options? Because I'm not heterosexual. That's not the attraction I feel. So am I supposed to lie to my heterosexual partner? Because that's what I'm supposed to, like, that doesn't seem right. And then it's like, so am I just not allowed to have love or a relationship in my life? Like, is that the right answer? And how does that make me the best version of myself for society? I don't know.
I feel like we're having now a different conversation than
totally.
But I want to talk about this a little bit because, again, this is a conversation I've been having with a heterosexual. We're both divorced, and we've really actually spent a lot of time on this conversation because I've really been trying to process this concept of, first of all, why has divorce been so demonized and stigmatized in our world that we actually have so many people who stay in unhappy relationships? Mm-hmm. And I can think of a ton of couples like that that have been married forever but are miserable.
Yeah.
And we've demonized divorce so much. We've stigmatized even what it means to be a child of a divorce. If we would really kind of think about the concept of growth and soul growth and personal growth, it's really unlikely that two people, unless they are really working together in simpatico, like they are really working together very consciously to stay together that long and grow together that long.
Yeah.
So why is, like, my brain just is blown that our cultural narrative is it's more important to stay married, that cis marriages, heteronormative marriages, are way better, more safer, more secure, more God-given. Like, all of these are just narratives that we've been fed that make us not actually be with people who bring us joy and laughter and hope and growth and expansion.
And at the same time, we talk about so much, whether it's in our work meetings or through memes or whatever, about the fact that we want people to show up as their best selves, the best version of themselves, the smartest, the most creative, the most loving, the funniest, the lightest. We don't want people in sadness and darkness. We don't want them to be in bad moods. If you want to be surrounded by people who are living their best lives, it's because they're living fully into themselves. And so then when we put these layers on and say, well, you're not allowed to experience the fullest version of love in your life because that would mean divorce, or you're not allowed to experience the fullest version of love in your life because that would mean a same-sex relationship, we are putting a cap on allowing people to show up with love and joy in their life. And when you think about, I don't know, when I think about me personally and when I feel best, like, love feels so good to me. And that's not only my love for Jen. That's when I am totally head over heels in love with my kids. That's when I'm feeling so much love for my friends. That's when I'm feeling love for the work that I do. I am a way better person to be around. But then I am a Krabby Patty. And it's like, why don't we want that for everyone?
So, but you know what? You just tapped into something that I think is humongous.
Oh, good. Enlighten me. What did I?
Because I'm different. Love does not light me up. Safety lights me up. If I walk into a room and I don't feel safe, it doesn't matter how much you love me or how much you tell me you love me. I can't feel it. For me, the safety is the prerequisite.
I was going to say, it's like a hierarchy of needs almost. But this, I love how you are bringing this around, because this actually goes back to the allyship or unsafe allyship. And it took me right to the phrase of, you know, I love you, but I don't love the things you do, or love the sinner, hate the sin. And it's like, again, you've removed that layer of safety. So is it really love if it doesn't feel like love to me? So if you're not feeling safe in a situation, it doesn't matter how much somebody says, but I love you, but I love you. If you don't feel safe, it doesn't feel like love. So maybe love does light you up, but it has to be real, true, secure, safe love.
Yep.
That makes a ton of sense. And if we think about this too, you know, the thing that gets me with the whole love the sinner, hate the sin, and like, or telling LGBTQ people, but I do love you, but I do support you, when it doesn't feel like that, is we hear this kind of language a lot in abusive relationships as well. I do this to you because I love you.
I just was thinking of that.
I love that you're dropping the F-bombs again. Keep it authentic.
I was just thinking of that. Like, how often we walk into a space that says, I love you, but I'm doing this to save your soul. I'm doing this because I love you. Yes, it goes back to what we were talking about in that uncertainty episode. All of those things that were repeated phrases from our childhood are now considered emotional and mental abuse.
Yeah. And I get that more, like I have been experiencing this now more to an amplified level, being an out member of the LGBTQ, like a lot of this suddenly makes more sense to me. And I think you hit the nail on the head of like why there is such a thing as unsafe allyship, that there are still people who put themselves out there as allies and may truly believe in their hearts that they're allies, but they are unsafe to be around. There's not that sense of security. There's not that knowing that when it comes down to it, when it comes down to voting for the laws that are going to see me as an equal person, that you're not going to show up for those, but you're going to tell me that you support me, but not through your actions.
Yeah. I was thinking about, I didn't end up getting the job, but I applied for a job in Tennessee and I was so excited. But I was talking to my son about it and I said, it doesn't feel, because Tennessee has some tough LGBTQ laws happening right now. Especially,
they sure do.
Especially for the drag queens and the trans group. And so I said, it feels really inauthentic for me to take a job in Tennessee, given everything that's happening in the state of Tennessee. But the particular university that I had applied to and interviewed with, they had made a very clear statement that they did not align with the same laws as the state of Tennessee. And not only that, but the president of the university was very much vocal about doing whatever he could to start making changes at the state level. But like their Pride Center on campus was huge and beautiful, and they were doing so many amazing things. But even just like that, just me saying, boy, it feels inauthentic for me to take a job in Tennessee. What do you think? And so it was a conversation that he and I had, even in that area. And I think, kind of going again to your point, you know, we can't do everything right. And I don't want any of our listeners.
Truth.
Yeah, I don't want any of our listeners to think that we expect like this perfection out of them. But it's just an awareness, you know, like just be able to pay a little bit of attention to, you know, you might know what's happening in other countries. You and I just had a conversation offline where you might know what's happening in other countries, but do you know what your neighbor is facing? Hmm. You know, do you know what your neighbor who has a transitioning child is facing in your area? Do they have safe medical care? It's not that it's like you might not be able to change any of it, but I think this concept of being a safe ally includes recognizing, and I was just trying to find the quote. I thought it was Brené Brown that said that the most dangerous person in the room is the person who doesn't recognize their bias and privileges. And I think it's true when it comes to safe allyship.
Yeah.
You can't tell somebody that I love and support you exactly as you are, but be raising your hand to the square in your church community saying that you support only principles of opposite sex, traditional role valued homes. Right. Like it's, you just can't have both.
Yeah.
And you're safer to me if you just own what you, like, you are more safe to me by telling me that you can't love me unconditionally than you are to me trying to straddle both edges of the fence.
Agree. And this doesn't mean that we're not creating space for people to learn and grow. I mean, obviously you and I both, Trisha, have been on our own journeys from, you know, adversary, or I would say I was probably more of a faux ally or unsafe. I don't know how I was not a good ally. I'll say that. And it is, it's a process of learning and knowing. But yeah, with that quote, when you don't even recognize your own bias or your own privilege, like that's, and then you try and dismiss it in other people too, when they try to tell you their story and you say, oh, we all go through that, or that's not unique to you. Big pet peeve. I'm hitting on a nerve right here. Yeah. But this is why too, when I do see true allies who really show up and are doing the work. Again, it's not about being perfect, but it's about saying, you know what? I want to understand what you're going through. I want to know what unseen struggles my neighbor is facing so that I can support them, because that's what feels like love and community and being a good neighbor. Like, that's what feels real to me.
Yeah. So there's a lot there, actually. I'm surprised. So this person's question was specific to like religious organizations, religious communities. But I just appreciated that she had the, I don't want to say courage, but maybe it is courage, that she just had the courage to test me on that concept that it's not quite as black and white as allies or non-allies, that there is a concept of the safeness. And I'm just, again, just going back to what I was saying about feeling loved and needing that safety to be first, because I think we automatically, if we feel unsafe, we put up our walls. And anytime we put up our walls, we automatically disconnect. And I think that happens not just for me, you know, walking into the room, but also for the person who's created that lack of safety. Again, if you're the person who is going to church every Sunday and preaching the gospel of God hates gays, mm-hmm. or it's an abomination, or it's a sin, or it's vile, or whatever word you want to put on it. If you're going into that community and you're having conversations that support how evil and wicked and sinful it is to be gay, but then you have a child in your home who is gay, you also have to mask. It's not just the child who has to mask, but you're having to mask. So that means you are also at some level inauthentic to your whole light.
Absolutely.
And so then you're not showing up in your full love either. So you might be able to say, well, I do this because I love you, or whatever those stupid ass phrases are that we use. The reality is you're not showing up authentically either.
Yeah. I'm giving a presentation next month on branding for businesses and being true and authentic in your brand identity. But I think this goes back so much to a personal level of really deciding, you know, there's a lot of outside noise and it's hard to say, this is who I am and this is where I stand on this. But I think that people who are trying to straddle to please all the crowds, you know, who are trying to be the Bud Light of like, look, we support transgender. Oh, just kidding. Look at we support this anti-transgender crowd. And then you end up supporting nobody, and nobody knows what to do with you because it was all inauthentic and you don't know where you stand. Yeah. I don't want to say pick a side because I hate the fact that this is even an either or thing, but I just hope we can all fall on the side of love.
I do too, but I have to be honest, in my own life, again, I said in the last episode, I've been going through the stories in my dissertation, and I've actually had a couple of days where I've really, really been grieving very hard. Probably the most tears I've cried since my divorce, in all honesty. And I've kind of just been wondering, what is it that I'm mourning, and what is it maybe that I'm in denial of? And the thing that I just keep looking back on is that I did have to make a choice. Mm. I couldn't stay in both of my worlds. I couldn't stay in my church world, and I couldn't stay in my family world, like I had to make choices because I wasn't safe.
Yeah.
And love did end up having to be what was the deciding factor, but it had to be, do I love myself? Mm-hmm. It had to boil down to self-love.
It ain't easy.
Mm-mm. No. And I honestly do feel bad for many of our listeners because I know they're going through the exact same thing. We have people who feel like they have to choose between their children and their partners. And we have people who feel like they have to choose between their family members or their church community. Like, it's not this isn't a game. Like, you and I have a lot of fun on this podcast, but this allyship game is not, it's not for the weak. It's real.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah. So maybe I want to just leave with a great big, I love you all, because seriously, it's not easy.
Yeah. And I love you too. And I thank every one of our listeners who has taken the time to share questions and want to figure out what to do, because really the uncertainty is, you know, there's a lot of hard paths, but not choosing one and trying to walk two paths at the same time, I think, is probably the hardest of all. So thanks for including us on your journey, and hope this helped.
Yeah. Have a great one.
You too.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Life and Love in the Queue. If you enjoyed today's episode, please be sure to like, subscribe, and share. And if you have questions, contact us at lifeandloveintheque@gmail.com. Until next time, Q Crew.